Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
R.I.P. RBG, how unions remember her. Movie production in the pandemic to resume, safety protocols in place. And today on the show, our segment on working class perspectives, dealing with the relentless attack on unions and the latest from the United Steelworkers. Good afternoon and welcome to the Friday, September 25th edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. You can follow us on Twitter. Twitter handle, real simple, AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. We have two guests on the show today. Professor Joseph McCartan will be joining us in about 10 minutes. He's been on the show before. He's a historian on the U.S. labor movement in the 20th century. He is also professor of history at Georgetown University, where he taught over 20 years, since 1999. His research focuses on the intersection of labor organization, politics, and public policy. And he's the author of several books. His first one, Labor's Great War, The Struggle for Industrial Democracy and the Origins of Modern American Labor Relations. We'll talk about that. He's got a really good perspective. And this is posted on workingclassstudies.wordpress.com. This is the segment we started, oh my gosh, maybe 10, 12 years ago with John Russo and his wife, Sherry Lincoln, out of Youngstown State University. Both of them now working in Washington. Sherry at Georgetown. In fact, she's a colleague of Joe's. And he writes, because workers' voting rights were so often obstructed in the early 20th century, their efforts to build a successful labor movement had to be tied to efforts to win political democracy. He points out that the workers' movement's call for industrial democracy, interesting term there, industrial democracy, alluded to the inescapable interconnection of political democracy and a more democratic workplace. And he points out, for the half century between 1918 and 1968, that 50-year period, that interconnection was born out of the expansion of unions and political democracy, which pretty much reinforced each other. He goes on to say, workers' demands for industrial democracy during World War I helped open the door for women's suffrage after the war. It's 100 years since they passed that, 1920. The rise of an industrial union movement in the 1930s in turn created the political space for the long civil rights movement to emerge. And subsequent civil rights struggles not only won voting rights for African Americans, but also helped produce the last big breakthrough for U.S. unions. The organization of public sector workers that happened in the 1960s and the 1970s. He also wrote a book, and we talked to him about this, about Reagan and the air traffic controllers. And I've said this many times on the show. That was a turning point for organized labor because it pretty much gave a green light to corporate America that you can mess with labor. You know what? It doesn't matter if you belong to a union. Go bust them. Go bust them. And we learned on this show just last week when we had one of the writers from The Nation magazine, that Peter Robb, who is now the general counsel of the National Labor Relations Board under Donald Trump, was the guy that orchestrated the air traffic controllers union to fall apart. It was called PATCO back in 1981, 40 years ago, 40 years ago. And we have seen that steady decline in organized labor ever since. Not so much in the public sector. It's still pretty vibrant. But, you know, the right wing's going after that as well. And they did a good job on that with Janus, but labor stood up to that. So lots to talk about with Joe McCartan. Lisa Jordan will be joining us later. She is with the United Steelworkers, and she's going to talk about their efforts, continuing efforts, I might add, to educate members by moving to digital platforms. And many unions are doing this, and I have to credit the leadership of the steelworkers. They saw this coming years ago, and they jumped on this. And they have an online platform for classes for members. It's called, you just go to education.usw.org, education.usw.org. And they have a big virtual education conference coming up. And the theme is Smarter is Stronger. Smarter is Stronger. In the meantime, job loss continues. And I'm talking good jobs. I saw this on the Steelworkers website. Comment from President Tom Conway following the response to last week's announcement that Freight Car America will be abandoning its plant in Cherokee, Alabama. And guess what? They're moving the jobs to Mexico. That's right. Tom said the recent announcement that Freight Car America will be closing its Alabama facility and shifting production to Mexico is just further proof that we have not effectively reversed the trend of sending American jobs abroad. Greedy corporations continually hold the threat of offshoring jobs over their workers' heads, using it as a cudgel to thwart attempts to improve wages and working conditions. And the sad reality is that our country's tax system and trade policies make it too easy for corporations to abandon their dedicated American workforces in search of ever greater profits. And I'll tell you, a lot of workers are speaking out. I want to drive you to a segment on the Steelworkers website, one of our great sponsors here on the show. And this is at an Ohio steel factory where steelworkers had hope in the Trump administration's promises to protect their jobs. How many times have you heard Trump say, oh, yeah, don't sell your homes. Jobs are coming back. He said that in Lordstown, the GM workers, Lordstown, Ohio. Well, let's listen to how workers are responding to Trump's broken promises right here on America's Workforce.
My name is Fred Sylvia, and I'm president of USW Local 9309 here at ArcelorMittal Columbus, Ohio. Initially, we felt the tariffs were going to help us. I think a lot of people thought they were. Unfortunately, there was still steel coming in from overseas, and our business just started dropping off. On June 9th, the company sat us down and said the plans were to indefinitely idle, closing the facility with no chance of it, of us being recalled to work. The tariffs that were enacted, I felt up front initially, they looked like they were going to help not just the steel industry, but in U.S. manufacturing. Thought it was going to bring it back stronger than ever, bring it back overseas from the other countries to where we could support ourselves, which was one of the promises that President Trump was making. That has not come to fruition. Yes, some things have happened with trade agreements, but the tariffs were a short-term fix to a long-term problem that we still currently have today. We feel it was promises broken, not promises kept. But as I approached that gate for the last time, the one thing that kept coming to my mind was I had to stay strong for my local, for the USW, and for workers in America in general. Because if they didn't hear this, who's going to hear it? Trump continually wants to silence people. He wants them to hear what he has to say, not what we have to say. And we're supposed to go along with it? I think not.
Again, that's posted on the Steelworkers website. Just go to usw.org. In fact, there's another one there, and this one involves the Iron Range Miners out of Pittsburgh. And you can check that out on the Steelworkers website as well. Well, today's the day they're laying to rest Ruth Bader Ginsburg, better known as RBG. And I'm not going to get into the politics on that because that just got messy right away. I just want to read to you a couple of statements from labor leaders around the country on the scope of what happened here. Let's start off with Rich Trumka. He said the following: America has lost one of the greatest jurists in our nation's history. Ruth Bader Ginsburg spent her career defending the Constitution and the everyday working people who bring that document to life. She was a consistent, unshakable champion of civil and women's rights and the freedom to form a union. He went on to say the AFL-CIO, the labor movement, and all those who aspire for dignity on the job are better off because of Justice Ginsburg's service. Randy Weingarten heads the American Federation of Teachers. And in fact, she's from New York City, the same area that Ginsburg grew up in, Brooklyn. She pointed out, Justice Ginsburg is an icon. She leaves behind a legacy as a brilliant, hardworking jurist and a trailblazing feminist. Her loss is incalculable. Let's see, we have another one here from Service Employees President Mary Kay Henry, along with Lee Saunders of the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. Justice Ginsburg's dying wish was for the next president to appoint her successor, said Henry. That wish must be honored. Anything less would be an affront to the Americans who expect to have a voice in their democracy, including the people who are already casting ballots. And then Lee Saunders warned no justice should be nominated or confirmed until January 2021. To fill this seat now, just weeks before Election Day, would be a corrupt, norm-breaking power grab without precedent in American history. Got a comment here from Jim Hoffa, who heads the International Brotherhood of Teamsters, and he cited another Ginsburg pro-worker dissent from yet another party line. This was a 5-4 high court vote against workers. And he said this in praising the justice for always standing on labor's side. In the May 2018 case, Neil Gorsuch, named to the bench by Donald Trump, he wrote for the majority that mandatory arbitration provisions always override union contracts and labor law provisions that protect workers against bosses. Hoffa said, when labor and civil rights advocates sought justice at the high court, we knew that Justice Ginsburg would be there for us. She authored a strong dissent in that case, for the first time determine workers may not band together to challenge violations of federal labor laws. And she called the majority egregiously wrong in their decision. I remember that really well. But that's just a sampling of some labor leaders around our country talking about the passing of Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And one more here. Theatrical stage employees, members of IATSE and SAG-AFTRA, which is my union, along with other unions representing cast and crews, announced on Monday they have reached an agreement with the major studios on protocols to allow the industry to safely reopen. The protocols pave the way for creative workers who have been hit hard by the pandemic to resume their crafts and livelihoods in workplaces redesigned around their health. How about that? Guiding principles include strictly enforced testing regimens and safety protocols, what they're calling a zone-based system, and the diligent use of personal protective equipment. Matt Loeb is the president of IATSE, and he said through this process, although it's not easy, unprecedented inter-union collaboration and unwavering solidarity enabled our unions to achieve strong COVID-19 protections that will translate into safer workplaces. See what happens when everybody works together and unions lead? Good example there. All right, we have to break. You're listening to America's Workforce. Our segment on working class perspectives coming up next. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A 500,000 strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement. and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferentz with America's Workforce.
And we're back. It's called America's Workforce, where we are available on various platforms, including Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Once again, we ask that you subscribe to our podcast. We're getting more downloads each and every day. We do appreciate that. Coast to coast, all you got to do is subscribe and eventually give us a rating. A 5-star rating would be greatly appreciated. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Find them online at oft-aft.org. Let's go to line number one. Welcome back to the show. Had this guy on a while ago. I remember talking to him about his book, Collision Course, Ronald Reagan and the Air Traffic Controllers and the Strike That Changed America. Boy, did it ever change America. He's here to talk about his blog. And this is our segment we call Working Class Studies. If you go to workingclassstudies.wordpress.com, you can read some really good progressive writing. And Joe McCartan is one of the writers there out of Georgetown. He is with the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. Professor, welcome back to the show. Thanks for joining us today.
Good. Hello, Flash. It's just wonderful to be with you. And thank you for the introduction, which was wonderful, and for pronouncing the Kalmanovitz Initiative correctly. A lot of people can't get that.
Well, you know, when John Russo moved over there, I had to learn it pretty quickly because I saw that name. I said, oh, boy, I got to work on this one. All right. Talk to me. Talk to me about your post here. Let's start there. It's called Undelivered, the DeJoy Scandal and the Democracy in the Balance. This is really, really good because you talk about what's going on now, and then you look back into history and where we were in the 1800s, the 1900s, with labor rising, labor falling. But where we are right now, it seems like when you hear Trump saying make America great again, you have to wonder, OK, what's he talking about? Is he talking about going back to the Gilded Age? What are we looking at here? Let's start with the postmaster here. And it's interesting, too, because apparently the Washington Post recently uncovered 7 former employees of one of his companies being urged to donate to political candidates, which isn't that supposed to be illegal? Aren't there laws against that kind of thing?
Right. Yeah.
Well, let's pick it up there.
If they did it, they would get bonuses. So he was basically reimbursing them for this, which is if they can prove this in a court of law, of course.
Yeah. So what's your thoughts on the Postal Service right now? Do you feel confident, especially with this guy in charge?
Well, I am confident in the postal workers. I am confident that they are wanting to and will do the right thing. But I am not confident about the leadership of the U.S. Postal Service under Louis DeJoy. And, you know, looking back over his career, this guy is a partisan hack. I mean, when he was at New Breed Logistics as the CEO, exactly as you've said, he recruited his own employees to donate to the causes of Republican candidates. He would reimburse them for these donations. And this is not legal. But he used this, and in effect, he used his power as the CEO to make himself a big figure in Republican circles, because all of a sudden, you know, he's able to produce all these donations. And so he rose up quickly in the attention of people within that party. And, you know, when Donald Trump wanted to install a postmaster general, and now, given recent events, I think we can see that there was some level of thought to this. Who better to put in this position than a guy like that, who was involved in really trying to coerce his own employees to further a political cause, especially if, as president, you want to try to disrupt voting by mail in the midst of a pandemic.
Yeah.
And so all of a sudden we have Louis DeJoy running this operation.
Now, what's this about Democrats? Apparently, they're twice as likely to vote by mail in this election. Can you speak to that? I'm wondering where does that come from? Well, how do we know that?
Well, I think, you know, this is coming from polling and then, you know, breaking that down by party. I think some of it has to do, quite frankly, with what you see in more Democratic areas regarding people wearing masks, doing social distancing, taking the pandemic seriously, and people who go to Trump rallies for whom, you know, they aren't distancing, they aren't wearing masks, and they think, you know, we'll just go ahead and vote in person. We don't need to worry about the pandemic. So
right.
the thing about it is that I think, you know, Democrats are more likely to vote by mail because they're trying to be safe. And I think what the danger of the election we're facing is that the president knows this and is setting up a situation in which maybe not all those mail ballots get delivered in time because, you know, his guy at the Postal Service has been really, you know, denying overtime and doing other things, removing some sorting machines and things from places that will mess with it.
You point out in your article that this is really nothing new. If you go back in the early years of the 20th century, things like what DeJoy is doing at the post office was pretty commonplace, right?
That is absolutely right. And you were saying a moment ago, you know, make America great again like it was when.
Right.
And, you know, I think what you see here is, with the DeJoy scandal, is that they want to make America like it was 120 years ago, where it was hard for working people to vote without coercion. I point out in the article the work of a famous sociologist from the early 20th century named John Fitch. He went to the steel towns of western Pennsylvania, like Braddock, and he interviewed steel workers to find out, like, how the company dealt with them around election time. And, you know, they told him point blank, and Foreman even discussed this as well with him, that just before the election, the word would come from the headquarters of U.S. Steel down to the plant level saying, these are the candidates we need to have elected. The foreman would be dispatched to gather the people who worked for them. And before the union flash, of course, if you weren't on the good side of your foreman, you were out.
Uh-huh.
And so the foreman, you know, would actually help escort you to the poll to make sure you voted the right way. And if you did, you had a much better chance of having work again the next day. During a time of layoffs, right after a recession in 1907, the workers reported to Fitch that they were told point blank, you know, we're going to rehire the politically loyal workers first. And so this is an old thing in our history. That is the way in which employers will try to use their power over workers to coerce them. We've seen it in recent times in some of the ways. You see that, you know, Trump has gone to, you know, stand in front of the employees of a company, and they're just told by their CEO, go out and stand behind the president, you know, mm-hmm. to provide a photo op for him. They become props to this president. And so we see all kinds of ways in which this very old kind of tactic of coercion of your employees continues to remain with us.
Oh, yeah. And there's a lot of intimidation going on in America today. If you're not voting for Trump, there's something wrong with you. How, you're unpatriotic. You can't do that. Come on now. Come on. I want to talk to you about this period that you, and I referenced this at the top of the show, between 1918 and 1968. That's an interesting part of American history. We got a half century there, 50 years, where we saw a worker movement. And it began, what happened there? It was post-World War One, and people were just wanting something different?
I picked those years because 1918 was the heart of World War One, and it was during that war, actually, that the workers' movement really took a great step forward in the U.S. Workers did, for the most part, support the war effort. The government, in return, said, you have a right in the war plants to organize. And so the movement just took off. But as workers began to organize in that period, the demand that they made was for industrial democracy. They wanted democracy in the workplace, but they also wanted democracy in politics. They wanted an end to those kind of things that John Fitch was reporting on. They didn't want the employer twisting their arm about politics. And so I talk about this period beginning around 1918, a half century, as you say, where the great struggle in the country was a kind of a two-pronged struggle. It was to win democracy in the workplace and democracy in the ballot box, at the polling booth. And in that 50 years, these are the things that happened. Women won the right to vote. The labor movement expanded. It became an industrial union movement in the 30s. Those places that John Fitch had visited earlier, those steel mills, they became organized. They got some democracy in that workplace. The civil rights movement took off. African Americans who'd been systematically denied the opportunity to vote in the states where most African Americans continued to live began a struggle that produced ultimately the Voting Rights Act of 1965. And then I would say that movement continued as it spread into the public sector, where public sector workers said, we want some democracy in our relations with our employers as well. And so all of that happened in that 50-year period. And of course, we know 1968 was just such an important turning point in a bad way in so many ways. Martin Luther King is killed. Bobby Kennedy is killed. Richard Nixon's elected. And we start to move in, I think, a different direction after that. So in that 50-year period, though, those two movements, the movement for democracy at work, through especially union organization and the movement to really democratize the country, get the vote to everybody. Those movements reinforced each other. But sadly, you know, in the 52 years since then, we've seen a reversal in which the weakening of democracy in one of those realms weakened it in the other. And then back and forth, they sort of continuously weakened each other. As we saw union organization stopped cold, really, in the 1970s and start to be rolled back, you know, as workers lost democracy at work, they became vulnerable to lose it in politics. And we've seen voting restrictions returning. We see voting repression returning in this last 50 years in a way that recalls, like, what it was like 120 years ago. So, yeah, I think, you know, those 50 years were a crucial 50. We've had now another 50 that have been bad. And now the time is, I think, we got to push it back in the other direction again.
Amen. Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break and we'll talk about that, because we have to revive that democracy. There's no doubt about that. His name is Joe McCartan. He's a professor of history, executive director for the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor out of Georgetown University. Lisa Jordan will be joining us on behalf of the steelworkers, talking about what they're doing to educate members digitally in this new normal called a pandemic. It's all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes.
This is America's Workforce.
The United Auto Workers are one of the largest and most diverse unions in North America, with members in virtually every sector of the economy. Learn more about this proud sponsor of our program at UAW.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining,
atomic energy,
and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
America's Workforce appreciates our sponsor, the Columbus Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, who represents more than 18,000 workers from 19 affiliated local unions and district councils.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And we're back. It's America's Workforce, available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. Let's go back to our live line. This is our segment we do each and every month. It's usually on the fourth Friday of each month. It's called Working Class Perspectives. Joining us is Joe McCartan. Joe is a professor of history and executive director for the Kalmanovitz Initiative for Labor and the Working Poor. Some years back, he authored a book called Collision Course, Ronald Reagan, the Air Traffic Controllers, and the Strike That Changed America. And boy, did it ever change America. In our first segment, you were talking about that 50-year period, 1918 to 1968, and then things started changing. I know, and we've talked about the Powell Memo, which happened, I believe, in 1970, which pretty much told corporate America that, hey, you know, you got to stand strong because these union people are gaining a whole lot of strength. Now, that was, I believe, in the early 70s. And then Reagan gets into office and boom, first thing he does, he gets rid of 15,000 air traffic controllers. Professor, I don't know if you know this. I just found this out. We did a segment with The Nation magazine last week. The guy that orchestrated that, Peter Robb, he is now the general counsel for the National Labor Relations Board. Did you know that under Trump?
Yeah. I wouldn't say he orchestrated it, but he sure played a role in it. He was on the team that decertified PATCO, of course. So, yeah, that's him.
Yeah, it's really sad. And you're of the opinion, as I am, that this was such a game changer. And in fact, Reagan was a union guy. He was a member of the Screen Actors Guild. They kicked him out of the union because of what he did. It was shameful, but it really set the tone for corporate America. And here we are today, and Trump just pushed it even further. What I want to talk about here is, what do we need to do to change that 50-year period you talked about from 1918 to 68? How can we recreate that part for working men and women in the country today?
Well, that's the question, Flash. You know, that's the question I think we really need to focus on. And I think you're right. You know, the Powell Memo played a crucial role in providing a battle plan for ultimately the election of somebody like Ronald Reagan, and then leading right down to the present day with Trump and with, you know, all the changes of the past 50 years we've seen, many of them being negative. So how do we reverse that? I think one thing goes to, you know, back to the Reagan period and to the impact of the PATCO strike, which was, you're right, when he broke that strike, I mean, it just had a devastating impact. I agree with you in that, and that it really discouraged workers because the air traffic controllers were a highly, highly skilled group. And if you could fire and permanently replace them, then, you know, wasn't everybody in danger of that? And then you saw private sector employers taking real inspiration from what Reagan did and being very aggressive and actually provoking strikes in the 1980s in order to break unions. And this happened at places like Phelps Dodge with the copper miners. And so, you know, one of the things that happened, I think, that we do need to reverse is that unions were pushed back on their heels and really became reluctant to use collective action. And I think that we're going to need to rediscover ways of, as working people, coming together and engaging in effective collective action again to be able to start things moving in a different direction. Because I truly do believe it doesn't, it really doesn't even really begin in the ballot box. You know, what happens and who wins and on November 3rd is really crucial. But unless there's a movement that we start to build in support of change, and unless people come together in that movement, and unless they start to act together, it's really easy to defeat the will of voters that comes out of a ballot box. So we need to regain that that collective action muscle, I think. But I do think, looking around the country, Flash, that we are regaining it in sometimes some really unexpected ways. I think that the Black Lives Matter protests that have emerged in the past couple of months have taught a whole new generation how to participate in collective actions that have never done so before. And most of these are quite peaceful, coming together and like making demands, which is the oldest form of what unions did and have done. And I think people are discovering again the power of being in numbers and being together. And I do think that is our primary tool.
Well, Martin Luther King said many times that civil rights and labor rights are intertwined. And if you go back to that period again, from 1918 to 1968, that was pretty evident back then. So we may be going through a new movement here. We'll see what happens. But we're going to leave it on that note. Trying to be optimistic here, looking to a better future here for working men and women, because we've taken it on the chin, no doubt about that. Professor, you take care, be safe, and I'm sure we'll be talking down the road, okay?
Great to talk to you, Flash. Take care now.
All right. You got it. Joe McCartan, this is our segment we do each and every month, like I indicated, Working Class Perspectives. Do check out those blogs, workingclassstudies.wordpress.com. Quick break. Lisa Jordan is with the Steelworkers. She's going to talk about what they're doing virtually to educate members, all part of America's Workforce. Back in a few.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
America's Workforce Radio is sponsored in part by the International Union of Painters and Allied Trades, District Council 6, representing painters, glazers, drywall finishers, and sign and display industry workers. They remind you that belonging to a union is your right as an American.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter, Twitter handle AWF Union Podcast. Before we get to our second guest here, and this is on behalf of the United Steelworkers, President Trump was at a rally at Pittsburgh International Airport. This was Tuesday night, and obviously that caught the attention of various unions, including the steelworkers, which are headquartered in Pittsburgh. The Pennsylvania AFL-CIO issued a statement rebuking his failed leadership. And this is what the statement read. We have been appalled by the gross negligence displayed by President Trump's response to the crisis our country faces because of his failed handling of COVID-19. As a country, we have lost more than 200,000 loved ones to the pandemic, yet the president refuses to take the actions necessary to protect those at risk and rebuild our economy. Yet one of the most respected jurists in the history of the Supreme Court, Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg, dies, and less than 24 hours later, he goes in a warp speed to fill her seat, rebuking a precedent created by his cronies. That comment came from the State Federation President Rick Bloomingdale. Now, Frank Snyder is Secretary Treasurer of the United Steelworkers, and he added, "The last couple of days have confirmed the worst fears of many and should signal a wake-up call for those not paying attention. This goes beyond negligence. This is a power grab for the powerful while the rest of us get left behind. The HEROES Act has sat in the Senate since the beginning of summer, May 15th to be exact, but the president and his party refuse to act on it or offer their own solution. Why? Because they are ill-equipped to serve. Ramming through a tainted Supreme Court nominee is of more interest to his political bottom line than the lives and livelihoods of people in Pennsylvania." Wow! Some powerful words there. I love the steelworkers. Speaking of which, let's go to line number two right now and join Lisa Jordan, who is the Director of Education on behalf of the steelworkers. You got some fighting people in that union, girls. You know that.
Hey, stand up, fight back, man. All the time.
You got to. Otherwise, yeah, they're going to run right over you if you don't, right?
That's right. And what Frankie didn't even mention is, you know, I'm the Director of Education, and we're so busy because Trump's labor board, they keep reducing the rights of unions. I mean, DFR, it used to be good enough to just work hard and try to do the right things for our members. And now, if you make one mistake and forget to return a call, Trump's labor board, it says that you're negligent. We used to have equality with management when we stood up to fight for our workers. And Trump's labor board has now said that we have to act more like employees and less like equals when we stand up and fight. So as a director of education, I'm spending half my time having to go back to our members and teach them about all the things that this board has done to reduce their rights. It's outrageous.
Yeah, and it almost happened overnight. Well, what do you expect? You got two union-busting attorneys on that labor board, and no voice from the Democrats there. And it's really sad. It's amazing. It's amazing what has happened here in the last 3.5 years to working men and women. And I just hope it motivates people. Well, speaking of which, in order to motivate, you need to educate. And that's primarily your job with the steelworkers. Talk to me about your role there, Lisa. What does it entail?
So I'm the Director of Education. We set up a number of programs with our staff and our rank-and-file members. We have a leadership program we do. So we're just trying to figure out every single day how to meet the needs of our members so they can represent workers in the workplace, so they can be better citizens in their community. So that's basically my job. And depending on what's going on, that could mean almost anything at the moment, but we're just there to try to do what our members need. So that's why we've moved everything online in the last 6 months, and we're trying to reach out to people in their homes. We're trying to make sure they're safe in their workplaces.
So was that a difficult transition? I mean, going virtual, and everybody's doing it. You're not alone. You know that. I'm just wondering about the transition to that. Was it very difficult to connect with people, or did it happen right away?
You know, it took a second, but I was really lucky. We had a brother from our Yokohama Tire facility who was working with us, and he really helped us move everything online. He had lots of experience doing that kind of stuff personally. And we worked really hard in the beginning. And we started out just trying to reach out to people and make sure they were okay. So we had a movie series and got very lucky when the movie Mine 19 came out. I reached out to one of the actors from West Virginia who's a strong union guy. He got the whole cast and crew to come on and talk to the members about the movie. Steve Earle, the musician, did a concert for our members. So in the beginning, it was sort of like, oh, man, what's happening in the world? And we just wanted to make sure people kept coming together because we're a union family and we watch out for each other. And once the initial kind of hit happened, then we started transitioning over to doing steward training online, leadership training, diversity training, officers training. So now, you know, we'd always rather see our members in person, and we believe in one-to-one, and that's the best education you can do. But we're busy every single week continuing the work of the union, just doing it online. The nice thing is, one of the stewards classes we just did, about 70% of the people we had in the class are people who had never had an opportunity to have steelworker education before, because we can get to those small locals that maybe don't have the funding to get to a class, or we can get to people in rural Montana in a way that we couldn't before. So I think online stuff will keep going even when we can get people back in person.
Yeah, I'm just thinking down the road, eventually we're going to get back to some kind of a normal in this country. Do you see a combination of in-person and virtual to speak to what you just said?
Yeah, that's absolutely what we're going to do. We've established a landing page now where we upload materials and everything for our members. So I think going forward, we'll be doing things both online and in person. I'm never going to, you know, give up being out in the field with folks, but I want as many people to get education as I can. So that's definitely what we'll do. We will be online and in the field when we can go again safely for everybody.
Yeah. I don't know you, but I could just tell in your voice that you're a people person. You want to connect with people because that's so important. That's so
100%.
Important.
And I want people to connect with each other.
Right. Education.usw.org. Now you have classes on that. Is that how it works? Maybe you can get into some detail on what's being provided right now to the members.
Okay, so at education.usw.org, what we're doing is those are short videos that can take you through the basics of a class. So we have stewards training there. We have a class that's basic contract language class. We have a few other things, but what we're doing is you can go to that platform if you're a member, and you can go through a class. So you watch a video, you do a quiz, but it takes you through some very, very basics. Or what we like to do is have people go there, do a class, and then come online with us, and we practice some of the skills. So one of the videos is about line guard rights and your right to be in an investigatory meeting. And so people go watch the video. So as a steward, you know what your right is. And then they come online and we practice the steps that you need to go through if you get called in to represent somebody. So that's where we're uploading classes and information. I actually got the idea because my kids go to Khan Academy online for math. I'm like, this is brilliant. We need this for our union members. And Tom Conway, our president, was like, yeah, let's do that. So that's what we're doing.
It's amazing what you learn from your kids, huh?
Oh, everything.
The learning never stops. Is there one that's more popular than other? I'm just wondering. You know, once I wrap up the show, I'd like to check some of these out. What's the go-to site, the go-to video on that platform?
Oh, I think it's definitely steward training. I mean, the stewards are the face of the union on the floor. They're the people representing our members every single day. And I think that's definitely the most popular class because, you know, every day somebody's becoming a steward and they can't necessarily get out and do training, but they're doing that job because they really want to represent our members. So that's the number one. It's 5 short videos that kind of take you through your rights and your roles and your responsibilities. So I think that's definitely, as I said, the biggest go-to one and the biggest bang for the buck. The challenge is we've got to go back, like I said earlier, and redo some of these videos because the Trump board is changing things so quickly about the rights of stewards that, you know, we're having to keep up with that.
Yeah, that's sad. Who does all the production on this? Is this all contracted out by the steelworkers, steelworkers involved in these videos or what?
We do everything. We've got a phenomenal new media department that does all the video work in the union. Anybody who has a minute should go to the USW webpage, you know, and look at the work that our crew has done just under video production. but they've helped us with some of the videos. And now we're actually recording some of our own at home. And they're not quite as nice as the one that ones that our video production folks do for us. But yeah, we do everything in-house. And so that's one thing that makes us really nice. We can turn around things pretty quickly.
Yeah. Oh, I compliment the steelworkers on the website. I go to it so often. In fact, at the beginning of today's show, we played a clip from the steelworkers in Columbus, Ohio, about Trump's broken promises. And it's really powerful, really powerful. And there's another one about the Iron Range miners on there, too. So whenever I get an opportunity, we'll play them here on America's Workforce, because they're powerful. Videos work. And you listen to it, obviously, on radio or podcasting, and then drive you people to the website, and there you go. You have a virtual education conference coming up, I understand. What's that all about?
We do. We had to cancel a lot of our in-person programs. We do about 37 weeks of conferences a year normally. So what we decided to do is to try to do a big virtual conference. So we have a two-day conference coming up that's free to all our members. 100 different classes or different sessions of classes are going to be offered over the course of 10 different tracks. So we're doing health and safety. We're doing legislative issues. We're doing a stewards track and an advanced stewards track, collective bargaining. All the things that we would normally teach people in person, we're doing online virtually for any of our members who want to come. So we've been spending a lot of time putting all those programs together for everyone. So that's going to be in November. I'm very excited about it, and a little nervous.
Sounds like you have more prep to do. You say November. Do we have a date on that yet?
November 17th and 18th.
November 17th and 18th. I was thinking you might try to do that before the election, but apparently you're not ready for anything like that, or what?
Yeah, we had honestly thought about doing it before the election, just to get something out to our members. But we have so many folks taking time off to work this campaign, because despite the fact that President Trump has said that he loves working people, he's done everything to hurt union members in our communities. And so we really made the decision that we had so many people say, hey, listen, I really want to help with the conference. I want to attend. But every spare minute I have is trying to make sure that we get really good union supporting people elected in my community, and that we get a president in the White House who actually really supports working people.
Yeah,
so we
yeah.
decided to put it off till after the
understand
after
that.
Election.
Okay. Well, as you know, there's a lot of union brothers and sisters that did vote for Trump. Do you think that they're going to do that again this time, or maybe they learned their lesson? What do you think?
I honestly think it's a mix. I think there are people out there that will vote for him again because they listen to what he says rather than looking at what he does. But
yeah.
I know a lot of members who've said, this isn't what I wanted. You know, this isn't the kind of president I want. I want somebody who has integrity and stands up, you know, got everybody's back. And so I think I've talked to a number of people really who plan to vote for Joe Biden because, I mean, Joe's been with workers, right? And so they know him, they're comfortable with him, and they want to vote for him. I'm sure there are union members that are going to still vote for President Trump. But I think it's people look at what he says and not what he does.
Yeah, maybe not the extent of 2016. All right, Lisa, we're going to leave it there. Lisa Jordan, Director of Education on behalf of the United Steelworkers, one of the many proud sponsors of America's Workforce. Tell Tom Conway I said hello, and all the folks over there in the Steelworkers are doing a great job, and I'll definitely look forward to that steward training video that you talked about, okay?
Hey, thanks, Flash.
Okay, take care. That's it for another edition of America's Workforce. Coming up on Monday, getting the federal government's attention on our infrastructure. Not an easy job. And the latest from the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. Until then, all of you, have a safe and wonderful weekend.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.